This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything that Richard, Tom and Brandy have been doing on a Thursday morning. It is June the 20th and we have kicked off our Summernomics focus for the year, looking at what the hotter months mean for the Dubai economy. We've done that by looking at the business of summer camps and what the booking of us can tell us about our movements and our spare cash this year, speaking to Eugene Kerrigan, who's Chief Inspiration Officer at the science camp Curiosity Lab. We've also been looking at whether or not summer is still a dead time for the events industry. That's with Natalie Crampton, Founder and Managing Director of TEC. And what summer means for people coming into Dubai. What are we seeing in the short-term accommodation sector? Vinayak Mitani is Founder and CEO of BNBME. As well as that, we've had quite the debate about paying for parking. We started talking about shopping malls. We ended up debating capitalism as a system. Richard Dean bravely sticking his money where his mouth is, certainly hoisting himself up and taking quite a lot when it came to messages coming in, agreeing or disagreeing with him. Have a listen and see what you think. We are talking about money. Lots of it.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
Have flashy flunkies everywhere?
I don't.
Who wants the bother of a country estate?
A country estate?
I don't know about country estates. The new Henley Private Wealth Migration Report suggests that they are a little bit more interested in beachfront.
This is a new report from Henley & Partners. They're the company who do second citizenship passports and so on. And they track millionaires around the world. And the UAE is now the world's number one wealth magnet, to use their phrase. Tom mentioned it in the headlines there. 6,500 and more than millionaires going to move to the UAE this year. In second place is the United States, which will attract about 3,800 millionaires. And we know the story. It's well documented. They came here during COVID, many of them liked it and stayed. Sometimes it's individuals, families, sometimes like Haveli, which we also mentioned in the headlines, the US Technology Investment Fund opening up in ADGM. What does it all mean for the UAE in the short term, but also the long term from an macroeconomic perspective? Well, let's ask an economist. Khatija Haque is Chief Economist at Emirates NBD.
Migration to the UAE over the last few years has been a key factor in the economy's rebound after the pandemic and also a contributor to the strong non-oil growth that we've seen over the last couple of years. Population growth drives consumption, and research suggests that when high net worth individuals move, they take their businesses with them or create new businesses, which then also leads to job creation. Greater investment will support faster economic growth over the longer term, but over the short term, we may see some dislocations in the market as demand for certain types of real estate or goods and services may rise faster than supply. Eventually, supply rises to meet the demand, but there can be some price adjustments as that process plays out.
Khatija Haque.
Silence in the studio as we decide whether or not to put our boots on and wade back into the who should be paying for what debate.
Interesting how that report gets reported in different parts of the world. Obviously here it's reported as Dubai comes top of the list and millionaires are flooding here. CNN picking up on the numbers as well overnight, but looking at the sort of exodus of millionaires from the United Kingdom, that's their angle that they're taking in. Millionaires are fleeing Britain in their thousands, says the American news website. Record number of millionaires could leave the UK this year. Why? Political turmoil, potential for higher taxes, future Labour government reducing the appeal therein. Their numbers, or the reading of their numbers from them, is as many as 9,500 people with at least $1 million in liquid assets will leave the UK, more than double the number that left last year, according to the provisional estimates by Henley and Partners. That's part of an ongoing trend, continuing exodus from the UK, 16,500 millionaires left between 2017 and 2023. So big focus on the UK, but it's not specific to the UK. Part of this global mass migration of the rich that appears to be accelerating at the moment. UAE, as we reported, has benefited from that. Of the 15 places with the most resident millionaires, UK is suffering more than most. Only China will lose more HNWIs, high net worth individuals, in 2024. Just one of just three locations alongside Japan and Hong Kong to have seen a net loss in the decade since 2013. So it's an ongoing trend.
Right. Are we going to other stories or are we doubling down on our current
position? No, let's look at some
position.
Of the messages who are coming in. If you just tuned in, very good morning. You're listening to The Business Breakfast. We were talking about a story about Salik, which has got a contract to charge for parking in most parts of Dubai Mall. Not all, but many parts of Dubai Mall. What are the fees they're going to be charging?
OK, so the fees are going to apply to Grand Parking, Cinema Parking and Fashion Parking. Am I the only one who parks in the same place every time so I know where my car is?
No, I always park in the same place.
I do. I'm in a bit in Fashion Parking near Kinokuniya. I know where I am.
Yeah, same.
Creature of habit.
Not going to tell you where I am, but yeah.
And man of mystery. Right, those are the areas that will be paid, and this is what you'll be paying. First 4 hours are free. The hour after that is 20 dirhams. The hour after that, so between 5 and 6 hours, will cost you 60 dirhams. And onwards, upwards, more than 12 hours will cost you 500. Leaving it for a full day, 24 hours and more, will cost you 1,000 dirhams. So there's a bit of a sliding scale there. I'm looking at the official communique from Dubai Mall, saying that they are transforming the guest experience, and they're talking about improving parking availability and streamlining the process.
You don't want to get stuck at a long
6 hours,
do you?
On the weekend.
No. Dubai Mall.
The
all
first.
Right, I'll pick it up tomorrow. Bosh.
We've all done it. The first 4 hours on the free for the weekdays. 6 hours free on the weekend.
And it sparked a wider debate about whether or not we should be paying for parking. I said, fair enough. Pay for parking. I'd rather have a parking spot available and pay for it if needs be. And it just spiralled into a wider debate about, because Goring wrote in saying, I'm paying 25% of my salary on three transport things. He mentioned fuel, Salik and parking. My argument is, well, those things we should be paying either market rate for, or we should even be taxing them. Not a particularly radical policy, but some people don't like it. My point I made is, if we're going to subsidise things, there are other things we should be subsidising. Health, education, electricity. You could throw in food into the mix as well. But I don't think private vehicles are something that should be subsidised. So that's the kind of context of the debate. Lots of messages coming in. I mean, one of the most strident is this. No name on it, actually, but good morning to you. Richard Dean, you should be ashamed of yourself for your elitist, arrogant comments. Have you ever wondered how a large portion of Dubai's community do not have the same life choices as you and have to live in Sharjah, Al Nadar, Qusais, etc., and have to travel long distances to work with all the elevating costs? Disappointing, bigoted comments from a broadcaster.
There's a couple of... So it's much bigger than parking, obviously. I think we have moved well, well away as to whether you're grabbing a bite to eat after you see a movie at the mall and what it's going to cost you. This is when we're not even in the parking bay of the shopping mall anymore. But there's a couple of things here in the argument, is it? In terms of we have a city that's very, very busy at the moment. We know we've seen massive population increases here on the Business Breakfast with absolutely no statistics whatsoever, apart from what we are seeing, ironically, coming out from listed companies like Salik, is taking those numbers as a bit of proxy data and saying, well, if you're seeing the number of cars passing under a Salik gate, for example, going up about 8%-ish, I think it is, between 8 and 9% year on year, that's been the kind of number that we've seen from electricity and water and mobile phone subscriptions to give us an idea of the rate that the city is growing. Infrastructure takes a while to catch up, whether it's roads, parking spaces or whatever else. So how do we provide availability in the meantime? That's the question, isn't it? The bigger question. And how do we also make sure that the city remains affordable for people while we're doing that?
All valid points. Abdul Salam writes in. First of all, he says, what's a millionaire? In the context of the Henley report, Henley says it's someone with investable assets of $1 million or more. And then he says it's Richard versus the proletariat. Thank you, Abdul Salam. We've had a few people comparing me to Marie Antoinette on that one. Yeah, thanks very much indeed.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are kicking off our focus on the economy of summer, Summernomics, this morning. And not so much sitting back and unwinding as getting involved in learning, because we are looking at the business of summer camps. Very pleased to be joined by Eugene Kerrigan, who is the Chief Inspiration Officer at the Science Camp Curiosity Lab. Eugene, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Brandy.
So what are bookings looking like this year? Late, early, full, not full? What are the patterns?
So I had a look at this knowing that we were having this conversation. So actually, year on year, we're at a similar stage numbers-wise. Where we are seeing a difference is where those bookings are placed across the summer. So last year, most of those bookings were coming in the kind of week one. Now we're at the same sort of numbers, but it's spread from week one all the way through to August bookings.
What do you think that's because of? What's the theory?
The theory, and it is just a theory, is I guess it comes down to planning. So people are better planned or better organized. What's driven that? I know personally, one of the things that's sort of driven our own organization is flight demand and flight prices have caused us to move a little earlier or plan a little earlier. We also have a shorter summer, so I guess planning becomes more important, where you've got less weeks to fill and figure out.
Are you suggesting that people are booking earlier because they know flights are expensive and therefore they've got more ducks in a row this summer?
I think so, yeah. So like, to me personally, we planned very well, but we didn't book the flights, and we then had to change our plans once we realised how challenging our flights were. So people are seeming to get their ducks in order better. Certainly from our perspective, I mean, if someone's booking for week two of August, which we've got a number of people are booking into week one, week two, they clearly know what their plans are.
Tom's got a theory that people have disappeared early for summer, disappearing in Eid and staying away for longer. What do your bookings suggest?
Well, I've got a better anecdote. I agree with Tom's theory. So we're actually working with a school next week. We're doing a field trip where we go into the school. And across the year group, it's 275 students, and we do it kind of by head. And they are concerned that they're not going to reach 200 students, which across one year group in one school is a significant percentage of kids that they're not convinced will be returning after Eid.
So there's
without doubt. Yeah, it's a big percentage. Now, that's their worst-case scenario. But it's gone from 275 that they're reasonably confident that it's going to come in at over 200. But that's a big chunk of kids that have not returned post-Eid.
What's happening to the cost of camps, Eugene? Have you put your fees up?
We haven't. We certainly discussed it and thought about it. So we used to, like a few years ago, we knew that we were, I suppose, at the more expensive end for camps. And we worked hard to make sure that our value justified that. We haven't really changed our prices too much, but when we look at it now, we certainly feel like we're no longer at the top end. So the price of camps around us certainly seems to be increasing. And it's something that we didn't do it this year. We definitely considered it. And there's definitely been a move across the market, or certainly around us, where pricing has increased somewhat.
How competitive is it? What's happening to the number of camps in town?
I mean, honestly, so we sit and do, we're so unique as a camp. So we've got companies that we know very well, like there's a parkour company that we're very good friends with. There's a few other companies. There's camps. I know some camps have come in from abroad, which was an interesting thing. I hadn't seen that happen before, but camp specialist companies have come in to try and launch just the camp business model to the UAE market. I don't know how well or badly that's gone for them. Where I've seen that happen, they've been out of kilter with the local market because they've gone way too early, in my opinion, on trying to gather those bookings. it is a very, very competitive market. I mean, so if you think of all the venues, the schools, just about every school is looking to rent its space over summer to a camp provider. And some there will be camp providers looking to grab that space. So it's a hugely kind of saturated market where, certainly from our perspective, we try and make sure that our value proposition is stronger than most, let's say.
You guys also run camps, you know, after school through the term time. Summer traffic is going to slow down, but what's the heavier traffic and the longer time to get from A to B had on the impact of your sort of week-to-week business?
It's had a very real impact. So it's not a complete estimation, but we think we're probably 15% down based purely on traffic. We've had kids that have signed up for the term, and when they're turning up late every week, we know it's a problem, and the parents are doing everything they can, and our own staff, the challenges. So where we are based in Alcoos, if you time it badly, it can be very, very difficult. If I take my own kids do camps out in, oh, not camps, weekly sessions, one of them over in Motor City. And I struggle as a parent to get him there, or even just to pick him up. So that the traffic is certainly a very real issue, because we're all these after school activities are frankly a kind of luxury item. So if that luxury item becomes deeply inconvenient, it's easily dropped.
Is it becoming more localised? Are people looking for after-school activities and camps closer to home than they might have done?
Yes, and I think there are certainly providers that are looking to expand to multiple sites across Dubai. We've opened satellite classes in Jumeirah Park. That was in direct response to the traffic. As for Curiosity Lab, our model, we're hoping to actually open a sort of satellite in Abu Dhabi rather than do the multiple sites across Dubai. But there are a number of providers that with investment have now pushed to open from one to three or four venues across Dubai to make it more community-based, or make it feel more community-based.
What's that kind of thing doing to the price of venues? I mean, you're looking at sort of warehouses, and I mean, you mentioned schools over the summer, but for the classes during the term time, it's quite unusual spaces people are grabbing. What are you seeing happen to rents when you're looking around the place?
So rents are high. So we've been where we are for, so we're in a place called Just Play in Alcoos, and we've been there for 5 or 6 years now. So we're kind of comfortable where we are, but we do get approached quite a lot by, whether it's a sort of mall-based venues or a lot of the community malls that are out there. And whenever we do get approached, we'll entertain the conversation. And the ultimate rents, we would find it very, very challenging to open in some of these places. Now, I know they'll put deals in place for the first 6 months, and some of these landlords will be kind of encouraging, but for us it's something we've not gone down that road yet. But commercial rents are high, and even our building hasn't been full for the last 4 years, is now chock-a-block.
Eugene, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning. Kicking off our Summernomics feature, Eugene Kerrigan is the Chief Inspiration Officer at the science camp Curiosity Lab, talking to us about demand this summer.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we interrupt our heated debate this morning on the fundamental thesis of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations to bring you our Summernomics special.
Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday.
And now looking at the issue of the events industry in the summer season here in the UAE. Traditionally a time when events stood still for about 3 months, but no longer. Natalie Crampton is the founder and managing director of TEC Entertainment Company based here in Dubai, events company based here in Dubai. Morning, Natalie.
Good morning.
So you say that traditionally we used to plan events in the summer and deliver, execute in the winter, but now we're doing both. Explain.
We are. So our industry has changed dramatically. Post-COVID, things have really changed and we never went back to where we were. We are now seeing, as Dubai has developed and grown, and they've done an incredible job at being bringing themselves into an all-year-round destination. So despite temperatures soaring, we are seeing incredible venues and locations that work all year round.
Okay, so we've got the locations. You mentioned some places are doing outdoor particularly well. It's not just some loud, noisy fans. You say there's great indoor venues. You mentioned SeaWorld in Abu Dhabi. There are others. Even Jebel Jais in Ras Al Khaimah, a nice restaurant at the top there. And the temperatures are cooler. But Natalie, I'm going to disagree with your thesis that we still have events year-round here. And I'll give you two bits of anecdotal data. First of all, me, Brandy and Tom all work in the events industry. On a typical week in winter, we'll probably have 7 or 8 events between us that we're speaking at or hosting. This summer, we've got, I think, 1 between us over the 2 months. The second piece of anecdotal evidence I'll give is you, Natalie. You run TEC based in Dubai, but you've decamped to New York for the summer to work on events there. How can you tell me that we have a thriving events industry in summer here in Dubai?
I'm regretting my decision to be in New York, Richard. I'm working 16 hours a day instead of 8 hours or 10 hours a day. I'm on both time zones at the moment. Dubai is, it's thriving. We're not seeing it slow down. I went to an incredible venue just a few days ago when I was in Dubai last week. It's called Zenon. It's at the Kempinski in downtown. And we are looking at doing an event there at the end of August, early September. We haven't confirmed dates. It'll be one or the other. I stepped onto that terrace and it was cool. And I'm not talking AC as in big, loud, noisy fans that we've had, you know, that we have seen a cooling down outdoor locations in the past. It was perfectly AC'd and I felt like I'd stepped into a different country. It was incredible. And we're seeing more and more of these venues create these outdoor spaces and indoor spaces that are perfectly AC'd, great locations. And we're able to persuade clients now to start looking at Dubai as a year-round destination and not just a winter destination.
So why do we not know about any events? I'm looking at Visit the Dubai website, and I'm not having a go at you, Natalie. I mean, I've known you a long time. Yeah. But huge respect for what you do and what your industry does. I just genuinely believe that while Dubai may be busy in terms of tourism in summer, it's not in terms of events, at least in terms of a business breakfast style event, the kind that we would go to or people who listen to the business breakfast would go to. We certainly don't have any mega events like your Jitexes or your Arab Healths. And in terms of business events, I'm looking at visitdubai.com. Yeah, we've got concerts and stuff. The World Trade Center has something called the Beat the Heat Season 3. In fact, Brandy, have we got some music? I think producer Isa has put some in. This is Egyptian rapper Marwan Musa. Brilliant, we got him in the middle of July. But business events, Natalie?
Yes, as you know, those consumer events are not my bag and I don't know much about those at all. In terms of business events, we're seeing conferences happen. And we're also, don't forget, we have an event with Cisco in about 2 weeks' time happening in their office. We have a couple of things happening with Meta this summer. HSBC have a couple of things going on, very small, but they're happening. And I think clients are just, they're looking to kind of extend the year out. Our event season used to be packed, 6 months, everything crammed into one. There's not enough time not enough hours in the day. So filling up the months that were empty. And also don't forget we have virtual as well. So we can do a bit of both. It's the hybrid stuff is still around during the summer, particularly in August. Clients are talking about, okay, do we send an invite out for August? Yes, we can. Maybe only 50% of the physical attendees will come, but we can send a link out and have people join virtually as well.
Okay, so let's talk about what you're doing in New York, because this is an interesting trend. TEC is a Dubai-based company. You're based in Dubai. You've done a lot of work regionally and a bit of work globally as well for some of your global clients. But you have decamped to New York with your family, with your kids, the summer, because one of your multinational clients, you're doing a lot of events for them in the United States over the summer. This is an interesting example of a homegrown entrepreneurial Dubai-based company going global. How did that happen? Why didn't your multinational client think, we're in the US, there's loads of great events companies here, we can use them? It's interesting to know that you won that contract, because I presume it was a competitive bid.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? This one in particular was a really lovely compliment. So this is a client that we've had for more than 10 years. And the actual point of contact used to live in Dubai. She left Dubai around 4 years ago. And went to London. She's actually a New Yorker, but she stayed within the bank and she went over to London. She was in London for about 3 years and about a year ago made her way back to New York, still with the bank. So she's kind of relocated along the way. She's back now in New York. And she called me with a problem and asked me to help her solve it. She said that she has spent a lot of time over the last year trying out different event agencies in New York, and none of them could do what TEC does. And would I be interested in coming over to New York and setting up the TEC office and helping her out over here? So a really lovely compliment and an amazing invitation. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity to do that and have this experience.
Good stuff, Natalie. We're going to let you go. It's late in New York. What time is it in New York now? About 10:30?
It's 11:30.
I hope the kids are asleep. You off out for a big night out now? It's Juneteenth, isn't it?
It is indeed. No, I'm just happy we've got through this, Richard, without the kids coming and disturbing.
Natalie Crampton is the founder and managing director of TEC. Talk to us about the events industry here in Dubai. She says there is still some activity, quite a bit of activity happening. All part of our focus, not just today, but throughout the coming weeks on Summernomics. Natalie, thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We're all going on a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a
Yeah, and that works two ways, doesn't it? A lot of people, if you haven't planned already, then it's becoming more and more difficult because of demand, people planning their holidays away, but equally, more and more people looking at holidays here. For the summer months. That might be those coming from abroad, it might be those staycationing or otherwise. There are no shortage of options across the UAE, but what's demand like been for 2024, especially when it comes to short-term rentals, vacation rentals, holiday home rentals as well? Well, the man with his finger very much on the pulse is the founder and the CEO of BNBME, Holiday Home Management Company. Vinayak Mitani joining us now live here in studio. Thanks so much indeed for your time, Vinayak. Always good to see you, Vinny.
Thank you, guys. It's great to be here again.
It feels like things have come full circle as well. You know, whenever Vinayak's in town, you know that we're coming into a heavy season. It might be the heavy winter season here where demand goes high. It might be the summer season where we try and get the contrast as well. So paint a picture, if I can. What's demand been like this year thus far?
I think you've got to credit Dubai Tourism and Dubai as a brand, because what they've really done is make it a 12-month season. Mm. I think gone are the days where, yeah, we saw a slight dip during Ramadan, but it was very slight. But the summer occupancy is looking good. The rates are lower. I mean, I think that's a normal cycle that you go through anywhere in the world. But the demand is there. People are coming in. The airports are full.
So demand over the summer months. Why are people drawn to short-term rentals? I mentioned there the options here in Dubai, and we've seen the resorts and the hotels get very savvy to this as well. We've seen the packages they're putting together, especially for those coming in from abroad as well. What's the attraction of a short-term rental?
Well, I think you guys already hit it on the head earlier. So an additional room space is important. Nobody wants to stand in line for breakfast and you pick a sausage out of 100 sausages in a tray. The only difference I would say is that short-term rentals do offer concierge services. You know, for example, if you're coming to Dubai and you book with us, we would arrange all your tours and trips for you. So we do, there are concierge services. There are also customized breakfasts where you can get chefs to come in and cook for you. I think gone are the days where somebody really wants to come and stay in a 30 square meter, 40 square meter square. And they want a living experience.
And that's ironic, isn't it? Because one of the things people talk about hotel rooms here is how spacious they are compared to hotel rooms in other parts of the world. And then I suppose when you go out of a hotel into a private property, it's even more spacious.
Yeah, I mean, look, imagine you want to come to Dubai for the beach. You can choose a hotel, 400 rooms, 500 rooms, have a room overlooking the sea. Or you can choose an apartment which has a private beach where the residents of the complex go. It's got a supermarket, it's got a bar and a restaurant. So you have all the features of a hotel, but you have a luxury of privacy. And I think a lot of Dubai has become a brand which is sought after globally. And I think a lot of people coming from the UK, coming from Europe, coming from the US, we have a lot of American clients at the moment, want to experience what living in Dubai is like. And that's the tremendous apartments and accommodations we have here.
Why are the rates down, Finn? You just mentioned that.
The rates are down to attract a different type of clientele.
Okay.
And I think the people that come over the summer can't afford or don't want to spend. I mean, in the summer, in the winters, you can end up spending $1,000 a night. Right? In the summers, you spend $200-$300, which is still not cheap, but it's more affordable than $1,000. So I think over the summer, you start to get more budget-conscious clients.
And to that end, I mean, talk to me about the relationship between holiday home management, vacation rentals, call it what you will at the moment, and the hotels. I mean, a lot of people would look at in this go, they're two competitors. Hotels surely want that business and you want that business as well. Can the two work together or not?
I think we collaborate. I do think we also compete because we're all looking after the same guest. It's all about putting bums on beds at the end of the day, and we all want that. But there's enough demand. I mean, I'll just give you a quick statistic. Last year when I met you guys just before the summer, there were 20-some thousand short-term rental apartments in Dubai. We're at nearly 40,000 today. 40,000 registered apartments on Airbnb in Dubai. And I would say the average company is running, I mean, we're at about 80% occupancy as of this morning.
Yeah.
So out of 40,000, if you say 75, 80% are occupied, that means 25 to 30,000 apartments are booked tonight.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big demand. So 30,000 apartments, and if you take an average of 3 to 4 people per apartment, right, you're talking about anywhere from 50 to 60,000 hotel rooms or business taken away from hotel rooms into apartments. Now, it's not only the competition with the hotel, because we have a lot of guests that are staying here for 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Hmm.
We have a lot of people who are coming and moving to Dubai who are staying with us before they find a permanent place to live. And then they stay with us in Marina, they stay with us in downtown, and then they figure out where they want to stay. So I think we collaborate with hotels more than compete with them.
And I think you hit the note, because I think the hotel brands have become savvy to that. And rather than just see it as a big old competition, looking for collaboration. Because wasn't it this time last year that you signed with Marriott Bonvoy?
It was a couple of years ago, actually. We started off with Marriott over here. They experimented with us. And what that means is a Bonvoy member can come and stay with us and earn Bonvoy points or pay by Bonvoy points. We have special features for different layers of Bonvoy members. So if you're an ambassador, if you're a platinum, you get airport pickup, for example. You get daily cleaning in the apartment. You know, so we have special features for them. So that's how we're collaborating.
So the loyalty program's buying in as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk landlords if we can. Obviously, the real estate market doesn't need explanation here. We know what's going on with property, etc. Are more landlords turning to short-term?
Well, like I said, it's gone from 20,000 to 40,000. And we're seeing more and more adding on. We're going to probably double our portfolio this year. I think what landlords need to be careful of is there are management companies, you know, for example, coming out with offers like, we won't charge you any management fee for 3 months, or we'll charge you 5%, you know. And I think as a property owner, if you own an asset, you need to really question, if this guy's not going to charge me anything, how are they going to take care of my asset and what's going to happen to my asset? And that's the challenge, that there's a lot. I think there's the last statistic I saw, over 5,000 short-term rental management companies in Dubai today. When we started, I remember it was a challenge to even get a trade license. So as a landlord, you need to really look into the company you're going to work with because they're mushrooming all over the place.
I anointed you as the ambassador of the short-term rental industry a little bit earlier on. As in your role as ambassador, Your Excellency, what are the problems for the market moving forward?
You're very kind, Tom. I think quality control is probably the biggest challenge. You know, we look at this business as a hospitality business. We take it as our responsibility to make sure that the guests who come here, for a lot of them, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience and they save up a lot of money. You know, a trip to Dubai from America could cost $10,000 for a family.
Yeah.
Not everyone can afford that. So we take it as our responsibility to make sure they have a good time over here. Other companies who don't have a hospitality thought process or background are more about guest in, guest out. And that's where you start getting challenges with the upkeep of apartments, the service of apartments, guests showing up and nobody being there to check them in and nobody answering the calls. You know, when the company will say, sorry, we have a check-in time from morning. Well, Dubai Airport starts at midnight. You know, midnight to 6 o'clock in the morning is the busiest time. That's when you get most of your check-ins. So you have to have a hospitality thought process to really run this business.
It's going to be a busy old summer for you. But as you said, it's a busy old year, isn't it? You know, seasons just blend into one. But can't thank you enough for taking time out to speak to us here. Have a great summer to you and all the team at BNBME. That was the founder and the CEO, Vinayak Mattani, joining us live on the show. Thanks for that.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.